Welcome, Tricia.
Well, thank you. That's a lovely introduction. I'll try to live up to it. And I'm a big Castle fan as well myself, so I'm right at home here.
Did we get your name right, the last
name? Yes.
Good, good, because we never know until we hear it, because we see credits and stuff, but we never, you know, and especially some of the writers, and we'll say their names, and then we get, you know, so far off from what it really is, so it's nice to know. And you do watch Castle?
Yes, so yes, I'm a big fan of Castle. I love it.
Who's your favorite character? Put you on the spot.
This is politically incorrect not to say Stana. I love them all.
Okay, so you're politically correct now. Okay, so to start off our interview, we just want to let everybody know out there that at the end of the interview, we'll be accepting calls with questions, and Tricia will answer some of your questions. So towards the end of the interview, we'll let you know so you can start calling in if you're not already on the line. We have 50 open phone lines for your convenience, plus Skype from around the world. And so you can also Twitter us and Facebook us with your questions. But we're going to take the callers first, with depending on how much time Tricia has to answer. So to get going with the interview, Tricia, we always like to ask people a little bit about themselves before we talk about Castle. So tell us, where were you raised, born and raised, and tell us about yourself. Where do you live now, and what are your personal interests and hobbies away from Castle?
Okay, I was born in Fullerton, which is in Southern California. My family moved up to Northern California, the Bay Area, a suburb of San Francisco called Concord, when I was about 3. So I grew up there, went to high school and everything, all up in the suburbs around San Francisco. But I moved back to Los Angeles, went to attend UCLA, and just was hooked on the city from that minute and never left. So so I love it here. There's just so much going on, so much diversity, so many different things to do. I think it's the greatest city. I live in a west side area called Del Rey, which is very close to Marina Del Rey, which a lot of people have heard of. Yeah.
Right.
Kind of near Culver City as well.
I didn't know there was a Del Rey, and I was born and raised in California. But there's so many new towns coming in, new cities all the time. But I went to college in Fullerton.
My dad attended. It was not a state college at the time, but it's now the California State University Fullerton, and that's what he was attending when I was born.
Right there by Chapman, right off of Harbor Boulevard. Yep, right by Disneyland. Okay, well, that's great to know. And what about hobbies?
Let's see, hobbies. I guess music, you know, it's kind of lame, but music has always been my hobby as well. So I do spend some time going to see bands and stuff in my off hours. Oddly enough, I love racing now. I got married about 3 years ago, and my husband is a gigantic form of the European type of racing called Formula One racing.
Right. No
and
no.
I just picked it up through osmosis, and I'm now a huge fan of that. The new season starts in about 2 weeks, and getting very, very excited about it.
Who's your favorite driver? Team?
We are a Fernando Alonso household, so we are now Ferrari fans. And then Jenson Button is my close second.
Okay. Well, I have a good friend that raced Formula One cars, a female lady, back in the 60s and 70s, which was unheard of for a year in Switzerland,
completely.
And her family did not know about it when she was in college. So
it might be best for parents not to know that. It's a rather
dangerous
sport.
She became a famous actress, Barbara Babcock. I don't know if you remember her from Far and Away and Space Cowboys and Dr.
Yeah,
Quinn.
Yeah, I do recognize that name.
Yeah, Hill Street Blues and Law and Harry Graw.
Redhead.
Yes. More of a character actress. She was Eddie Munster's teacher, and she was Blanche's sister in Cheer. Golden Girls, and she was on all these shows. But anyways, at what age did you know music was going to be an important part of your life?
I was a little bit of a late bloomer. I really discovered music not until college. I know a lot of people start much earlier if they have older brothers and sisters that are really into it. I mean, I listened to the radio. I had some Billy Joel cassettes. You know, I wasn't immune to it. I saw Journey at Oakland Day on the Green number 5. That was my first concert. But in terms of just starting to really obsess over it, that was not until college. And just people on my dorm were really into good music at that time, and I just kind of picked it up from there.
So I take it you were an instigator, a piano man, for a Last Call in season 3?
You know, I was
Saturday
not.
Night.
Oddly enough, that's a good example of a song that gets written into the script, which happens before I even have anything to do with it. So I think that was Andrew Marlowe's idea.
Oh.
I can't swear to that, but he's the one that first brought it up with me. And they chat, you know, when they put a song like that and they check with me first to say, we really want to use Piano Man. Can we get that cleared? And then I immediately go to the people that own the song and make sure it's okay before they finalize it in the script. But occasionally a song gets written in like that from the beginning, and that's just what it is.
But not often, just occasionally, right? You do
more
of that?
Yeah, I would say it happens maybe once every 6 or 7 scripts.
And you did mention a little bit of this just in your previous answer. What types of music did you listen to growing up? And you said your first concert was in Oakland there. But
yeah,
what types
Journey.
Of music? Were you rock?
When I was growing up, it was, a lot of Journey, Van Halen. very different than what I listened to.
The Who, The Doors?
Led Zeppelin. Yeah, that was a little early for me. But yeah,
what about
the
Eagles?
Definitely the Eagles. Definitely the Eagles. And Kansas and what was that other
Kansas.
Band?
Kansas. There you go, Cheryl.
Yeah. Pablo Cruz. Anybody remember Pablo
yes,
Cruz?
Yes. Sorry, I put myself on mute. I'm like, yeah, I know that band.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, you say on your website, because we checked you out, we check out our guests, and we always look to see what everybody's doing before we invite them on. And you did kind of like underground music, right?
I did, yeah.
In college and stuff.
I hosted a show on KCRW for 15 years called Brave New World, and I really championed bands that were so far from being Van Halen or Journey, bands that really were under the radar. And I got into that music from listening to KCRW and a show called Snap that was hosted by Deirdre O'Donoghue. She was the first champion of the underground music to really make an impact on me. And I just started seeing the beauty of this music that everybody didn't know about, and it just became my mission, and still is, to get it out there, and that more people will discover these bands that are so fantastic, and just they don't get radio airplay for a variety of reasons, and I just think more people should know about them.
They're very, very creative minds that play that kind of music. That's great you do that.
Now, Stana Katic would fit right in there. her variety of music, you ought to get together with her sometime. Her variety of music is unbelievable. It goes across the board with, all kinds of music. And she's always tweeting what she's listening to or walking to with her ATP travel project. She's always talking about the songs she takes with her on the road. But you were a radio DJ for 15 years.
Right.
How did that all come about? I mean, what did you guys do? You just started it in college and then it became where you just went over to the radio station and said, I'd like to apply for a job here? How did you concert?
It actually happened pretty organically. If any of your listeners listen to KCRW now, it's grown up quite a bit in the last 20 years. It's really a very different station than when I worked there. Not better or worse, just it's just different. It's run more rigorously. When I wandered in there 20 years ago, it was much more of a grassroots. There was no security. Anybody could walk in at any time. And it was just much more of a small town kind of family environment. I was listening to the station. I think what happened is one of my friends caught me sobbing in my office one day. This was after college. I was working for Xerox Corporation as a kind of like a computer programmer. And I was sobbing in my office after some bad breakup with, some loser guy that I'm thinking, I don't even believe I shed a tear over him now, right? And she said, you've got to snap out of this. You need to go do something. Go down to KCRW and volunteer that show you listen to so obsessively and just, she's like, she was over it, get out of this.
Funk.
So I went down there. They use a lot of volunteers because they're a community station and they don't have a huge budget. So I think I first answered phones during a pledge drive, which is a great way to get in the door there and really get to know some people there. And then I said I'd love to get more involved. And it sort of all fell into place. They happened to have a shift opening up on my favorite show on Snap with Deirdre O'Donoghue. And I was supposed to just be trained, and then when I got there, the guy that had the shift said, I've been doing this shift a while. I was thinking of giving it up. It was the Friday night, 7 to 10 p.m. shift. And I, like an eager puppy dog, goes, I'll take it. So I got to be friends with her, and she mentored me, and she literally kind of threw me on the air one evening when we were having a live guest. She said, come on in the control room. I need to go talk to our guest. And then she didn't come back. So
oh,
I was like,
Wow. Wandered off at past home security.
She totally was doing it on purpose, too. I just put some music on, and I barely knew what I was doing whatsoever. And then when she came back in, she just put the headphones on and opened the mic and said, well, it was your set. You better back announce it. And, you know, that was it. I was hooked. It was all over from
did
there.
Did you get paid?
Not
for
that shift. You do eventually. So I started doing, I think shortly after that, somebody had heard, somebody that did the programming at the station had heard me, and they eventually offered me a midnight shift and then a 2 to 6 a.m. shift. And then when I did start doing the before midnight shifts, you do get paid a little bit on KSTAR-W. Not really enough to, you know, live
no,
on.
No, not to live on,
3 to 5 hours
is usually what you get, and then you have to go off. And some people would come back and do split radio, you know, split shifts, and come back later and do an evening one. And then sometimes sign off the air at midnight or whatnot. I remember when I lived down there, it was K-Earth 101. That was what I listened to, and then the country stations. But K-Earth 101, I think, is still there.
Yeah.
It's still around.
Station.
Yeah. So
while you were a DJ, what was your favorite question or questions to ask your guests when they came on your show?
Oh, that's a good question. I did host a lot of live bands, and it was really fun. Always very nerve-wracking. You never really know what was going to happen.
Do you have any celebs on, big bands, later?
I had David Gray on his first U.S. tour before he went on to become huge. I had Pete Yorn on his very first radio. I was the first person ever to play his songs on the radio or to host him on a live show. I just happened to meet him literally when he landed in L.A. when he was moving here, and I posted a show at the Troubadour I emceed a show at the benefit that he was playing at the Troubadour. When I met him that night, I saw him play. I was like, oh, my God, this guy is great. So I just had that, you know, fortunate luck of meeting him before he was signed or anything. So
it was meant to happen.
Yeah, hitting it off.
Meant to be. I'm trying to think of my favorite interview questions. It's been so long now. I don't know if I remember them.
Probably
so you were in the
Go ahead.
You were early 90s? 1990s, early 90s you were.
Yeah.
Did this. Yeah, okay.
Exactly, yeah.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. I think I just, you know, I usually like to study up on a band and just try to find things relevant to them. It was always interesting to me to talk about things not related to music in a way. Of course, I wanted to know what their influences were in certain songs, how they came about, and what their plans were. But if I could find something non-musical to hook into, like a hobby or something like that, I always thought that was really...
Get them out of their safety zone.
I remember
when... Yeah.
Rob came on our show last summer. He talked about how he dropped, I think, a comb or a brush down an instrument, and he got kicked out of the class. But he used that in Castle later in life to make a certain sound. It's so interesting.
That's a good anecdote.
And then he also did a lot of talking about his family tree and how he found because he was adopted, and how he found his parents and grandparents and all that up in Canada.
And how they turned out to be, his grandfather turned out to be a composer or something.
Yeah.
That's so interesting, right?
That's what you call, you know, heritage, man, because he had no clue, and it was hereditary. You know, he had it in his bones or something. Now, do you write music or sing or play any instruments yourself?
No, I'm purely a spectator. I did take music lessons when I was a kid, but it didn't really stick. I don't have that kind of musical ear. Like, that's why Robert Duncan and I are great in terms of a team, because he really has an ear. I don't have a musical ear in that sense. I know what I like and what sounds good and what sounds different and fresh and new and what works great with the scene. But in terms of what key something is in or, you know, how many, even the tempo, I'm always a little fuzzy on that.
Tin ear?
He kept using the term musicologist. And I was like, wow, that's so cool, because he can listen to something from an emotion standpoint. Probably just like, you know, one of the questions I was going to ask you in a minute was about music itself. Do you listen to music and kind of categorize it in your head while you're listening to it, or you listen to it and just enjoy it and then later categorize it for certain types of emotions or feelings that you're thinking?
I would say I do both. I categorize it. I'm generally, when I'm listening to music, 90% of the time it's for work, meaning it's something that was sent to me or that I came in the mail or that I discovered, and I'm trying to figure out if it's worth keeping and if it's good for Castle or if it's good for the Big C. So I'm definitely in categorization mode. And I, in fact, keep notes in iTunes, which is my database of things like that, mood and what show I think it would be good for. Occasionally a song surprises me and overtakes me, and I start really enjoying it, you know, just on a personal level. That's always nice when that happens, and it gets like 5 stars in the database. And I try to, of course, work that in as much as possible.
Well, looking at your website, you have quite a collection of CDs behind you and some of the pictures.
Yes.
So do you catalog those? Do you know how to find what you're looking for, or you just throw them in there and just hope for the best?
No, they're in alphabetical order. I don't know if you can see or if we move them. Is there little alphabet blocks in the picture?
I can't tell you because your back is to the – I can't remember if your back is to us or you're – facing
yeah,
us and they're
back,
behind you. I can't remember.
Back is to you, and I'm looking towards the camera. But I have, they're all in alphabetical order by artist, and I have alphabet blocks dividing the separate letter categories.
That's
you know,
a
like
lot
the
of...
kind that kids play with.
Yeah.
Adds a little diversity to the wall of CDs.
Well, can you share with us, if you need to get a drink, just let us know, because I have asthma, so I'm always taking drinks, sips of drinks, in case you need to, because, you know, if your voice goes in or out. But can you share with us the process of becoming a music supervisor? What does that, did we get it right when we were reading the intro, or were you way off?
That was very accurate. I would say there's no real singular path, which is both good and bad. I think there's a movement right now to try to solidify that more. There's a group called the Guild of Music Supervisors that's formed, and they're trying to have certain guidelines and rules in place for what constitutes a music supervisor in terms of what training they have and what capabilities they have. Right now, it's pretty loosey-goosey. You know, they hire you, and you have they could hire you, and you have no idea what they're doing. There's no
guidelines.
You know, there's no way to get credited or anything like that. They just have to sort of, you know, trust that you know what you're doing, which is why a lot of people keep getting hired that have worked before, which makes sense. My path to it was really through KCRW, because that was such a public forum that people knew me and knew what kind of taste I had. So I first was hired to work on a small independent film, and I had a friend that was a real music supervisor, an official music supervisor. She learned it from being an assistant to a music supervisor, and she mentored me and trained me. I mean, it's the sort of paperwork side of it is pretty basic. Once you can learn how to do that, then a lot of it is on the job training, just figuring out and building the network of people that you call to clear songs and kind of understanding who that is. And obviously the first requirement is a big love of music and a passion and a head that's a database full of full of music.
So did you like go from UCLA like as a business major or something, or did you switch over to music there, or because you didn't have to have a degree as a music supervisor, you fell into that through the KRCW, but did you, because you went from computers to DJ to music supervisor?
She sounds like
I was a computer science major at
UCLA. I was just
going to
say that.
Yeah, computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
you sound like me.
Yeah. I worked at Xerox for a long time, and then I was volunteering at KCRW while I was working at Xerox. I kind of already told that story. And then through KCRW, I met some people that helped me get a lead on a job in the music business. I worked for Capitol Records for a little while.
In Hollywood?
Yeah,
I worked Capitol Records. It's now an apartment building.
Yeah, I worked in that building. It was so great. I mean, trust me, the day I walked in there, I was like, I have arrived. I have a job.
Yes, Elvis Presley used to go in there all the time. That was cool.
Yeah, the whole lobby's lined with old records from the Beatles and Elvis Presley. It's so cool. And then from there, then I got a job at KCR, a DJ shift and an actual job at KCRW running their music library. It's a crazy room full of CDs. Like, it makes my collection look like nothing.
Now, obviously. Did they do mainly, what was it, hard rock, regular rock, pop rock? What was, because I'm not familiar, I would probably have heard, I probably listened, but I don't remember.
It's a very eclectic mix, and it's very unique in that it's a public station that carries National Public Radio.
Right.
And most stations that carry National Public Radio don't play any music, or they play classical and jazz mostly.
Elevator.
But KCRW, yeah, kind of, you know, which is makes sense because that's sort of, a while ago, that was who NPR appealed to, and they just felt their audience was older, and, you know, that's just what they did. But KCRW always played a really eclectic mix. They became famous for a morning show called Morning Becomes Eclectic, where the host would play anything from classical music to the latest pop song to some underground punk band and just mixed it up all over the board. And that's really how the station's taste evolved, I think. And then for a while, every show had a different bent. The show that preceded me was all dance music, electronica. This was before electronica really even took off the way it has now. On the weekends, there was an African show and a reggae show. And so it was very much at any time you could tune in and hear something completely different, which is what people loved about it.
And now they're more formal and kind of went way away from all that.
Yeah, they moved away from the specialized programming. And they still play a lot of underground bands, but they also will play maybe things you might also hear on commercial radio, as long as they're good. I mean, everything they play is definitely tasteful and worthy, but it's a kind of a different approach.
So that might be where you found Golden State then, right? The guys who did the episode where Alyssa Milano was in it, Rose Ever After, and they sang that song at the end at the wedding, and they weren't really a hit yet. Did you find them, or did someone else turn you on to their music?
I think...
They were called Golden State.
Yeah, I can't
like
remember
that.
If... I don't think I knew about them at KCRW, but I
No, I mean later with Castle, you kind of found bands that
correct.
Aren't known, and you know how to find them or something.
Right,
their music is what I mean.
Yes, precisely.
So can you share with us a little bit about how you obtained the position as music supervisor on Castle? How did that come about, getting the job on Castle?
Well, that was really a recommendation from an exec at ABC that I had worked with on Men in Trees. I actually did not start until the second season of Castle, and they were looking to make a switch, and they did interviews, and my friend who worked at ABC said to the Castle producers, well, you should meet Tricia. I think she's great, and she did Men in Trees for us, and I went down and met with Andrew Marlowe and Rob Bowman, and had an interview. I should have been probably much more nervous than I was had I known how great this show was going to be. And they hired me. I made a little mixtape for them of songs I thought would sound good on Castle, and I guess it fit the bill.
And, you know, Rob likes to take his music home, and he drives home in the car listening to new music, as you know, and he likes to listen to the music at home and really get into the music, because we did a profile on him, and he gets really into every aspect of Castle, the editing, to everything. So that's kind of interesting that he probably took that. Did he keep that tape?
I don't know. That's a good question.
He did.
I'll have to ask him that.
Yeah, I bet you. But can you take us through working on an episode of Castle? Do you work from the script and then decide what music you like to place in an episode? And how many songs are you allowed to place in an episode? And do you work on every episode? And do you work in a studio or from your office or home? Or how does that all go? Just give us the day in the life of Tricia.
Day in the life. I work from the script for Castle because I find just easier to get songs in there the sooner the better. And with, you know, the experience I have at this point, I can kind of anticipate, although sometimes it does change a lot once you see the scene as it's shot. But from the script, I can generally get an idea what scenes are going to need music. And certainly if, you know, there's a bar, then there's going to be music playing in the background of the bar. So that stuff you can easily slot in. And it's easier for the editor, too. So I give the editors music for every scene that I think requires music from the script, hopefully about the time they start getting dailies.
So from the beginning, really?
Yeah,
of an episode.
Because it's just, you know, when they get dailies, they sort of start cutting a scene together. If it calls for music, it's just better for them to have it. Editors would rather cut to music whenever possible, I think, because it's just easier to do and it gives the scene a rhythm. I'm just going to take a breath.
That's fine. Take your time because I know you've been sick and you just rest, and that's fine with us.
In terms of how many songs, it's really, happily on Castle, my budget is, it's restricted, but it seems the appropriate amount for our show. And I can rob from one episode to pay for the other. So if one episode doesn't have any source music, I can use more songs on the next show. I would say our budget kind of calls for, is sort of set to pay for maybe one small song and one well-known song. We don't always use well-known songs, so sometimes I get more like three or four lesser-known songs. you know,
and help out those groups or that singer or that artist. And do you often find that you, I was looking through the music that you have used on the show, you do use a couple of them in another episode. You'll repeat them once in a while for a different, like the ending of a show or the, you know, you've used a couple.
Right, the same artist but a different
song. Right.
Yeah, because once I find out that Andrew and Rob love it, you know, then it's good to go back to that. You know, it fits with Castle, it's affordable, and so, you know, it's a certain tone that you hit that it's like, you know, you definitely keep that artist in mind as successful in making it all the way through the process. Because once, so what happens once I give songs to the editor, then they do their editor's cut with that music, hopefully. Sometimes they ignore me and put their own songs in. Trust me, that happens all the time. There's really a lot of ways songs can get in without my former approval. But that's okay. You know, the editor has a voice in the process as well, and they usually know what they're doing. That's how Pearl Jam got in there. Both the episodes with Pearl Jam, the editor is a big Pearl Jam fan. And
is that Justin, Warren, Steven, or?
That's Marta. That's Marta.
Or Brian. Okay,
yeah.
Marta. Oh, yeah, they're all in there, yeah.
Yeah. So, so the editor does their cut, then they work with the director to do the director's cut. Sometimes at that point the director says, oh, I don't like that piece of music, let's get some other options from Trisha. So then I send them more options. And then the producer's cut, same thing. They go through that. And at any point they could change it out. And then occasionally, then they send it to the network. The network sometimes says, no, we hate that song. Take it out. So I'm always, yeah, I get so excited when a song I love makes it into the editor's cut, but then it's like, cross your fingers because it still has a chance.
So it's like a surprise.
Yeah. A dance and a ritual to get it in there.
Rob described that, he said, the music supervisor suggests appropriate selection. That's how he said it.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's kind of on the same line you were, same page as far as you'll see a scene or you'll read a script and you'll know there's certain emotions evoked and you make appropriate suggestions. So I thought that was funny how he said that. But now it makes sense because you're like,
well,
my fingers crossed we're going to select it, you know.
Yeah. And, I of course I give them more than one option for every scene. It's just like when they're casting, they don't just look at one actor. So for every scene that I think requires music, I give them 3 to 5, maybe even more choices if it's featured music. And, you know, I think everything I submit is great, but of course I have my favorites. Fingers crossed.
Do you have like a week to do this, 4 days, 3 days to get all your music that you want selected, 10 days? Are you working on one while you're finishing up another? Or?
Let's see. From the script to the start of dailies is the script I get. I don't get every draft of the script. I get it once it's
final
production version. Yeah. Unless there's music written into the script, then they give it to me earlier. But if there's no music specifically written in, then I get it about 7 days before dailies. So that's the time I have. And I don't have to have everything on the first day of dailies. I've got some leeway there. But that's about the time I have to kind of do a first pass on the script that'll be the editor's cut. After that, it moves pretty quickly. If they call and need something, they need it pretty much that day because there's only a few days usually for the director's cut, a few days for the producer's cut. And they turn it around pretty quickly. And then sometimes we get on a what they call rush post, which is crazy.
And then you have to contact the places, right, and ask to buy the music?
Correct, right. And so usually I do that after it. I usually start that if it makes it into the editor's cut, unless I think sometimes I have a sense, quite honestly, where I'm like, oh, they're not going to keep that. so I can be a little more cautious. But generally I start clearing songs once they're in the editor's cut. And then if I send replacements, I clear all those right away because, you know, sometimes they don't pick it till the last minute. So it's better that it's cleared.
Do you have an office or do you work with Rob or do you work at home? Or
I work from home. I have a home office.
That's cool.
And, yeah, it's great. It's great. And then once a week I go into Hollywood and meet with everybody for the Castle spotting sessions.
Well, as a computer science geek, I'm sure you have every gadget there is at your house. Hey, do you get bombarded with music from people that listen to your music? Okay, I would assume
so,
yeah.
Do.
It's a lot of free music.
Yeah.
But a lot of
good.
Buy any.
Yeah, she got 95% of it is garbage.
What's on your iPod?
My iPod is a lot of things I need to listen to, regretfully. I'm trying to stock it. I started a separate playlist this year favorite records of the year, so that I would not only have. Sometimes I get in the car and I'm like, I don't want to listen. I need a break. I don't want to work right now, and I need something that's, you know, not a have to listen to, but something I enjoy. So I started a playlist of my favorite records of the year.
I think a lot of people have already run over to your website tonight and are looking at your picks, your selected picks that you have for each category. I was looking at your website earlier, so you're going to get a lot more people looking at what you suggest.
Well, good. That's the idea. Get the word out there.
Okay, Cheryl, do you ask her the question you wanted to ask her? You want me to go ahead and pass on that? I'm talking over the...
No,
there's a question here that says Cheryl to ask, so I'm wondering
well,
if...
This
did you
is
ask
the
that,
one about
or?
I did earlier. This is about the emotional roadmap that when Robert's trying to determine an emotion in a scene, and she answered it way at the beginning. So she does do the same thing when she's listening to music. She kind of categorizes it in her head while she's listening to it, and then later as well. So she takes notes in iTunes.
All right. So
five stars.
How much collaboration do you have with Castle's music composer or Robert Duncan?
You know, mostly my job is done by the time he takes over. I'm sort of like the first leg because, like I said, I work from the script. And then hopefully by the time we spot the music, everything is settled. Not always. Sometimes in the spotting session, the producers will say, yeah, I'm actually, you know, not really liking that song. I'm thinking you could have mentioned that a week ago. But then, you know, we do replace it. But ideally everything's done, and then that's when he really hears and sees everything for the first time and takes over. The exception to that is when there is live music that he pre-records, such as the 1947 episode.
The Blue Butterfly.
We did get to work together on that, and it was really fun. Those songs were both written into the script by the writers, so they were already selected, and I was happily able to clear them. And then I worked with him on finding examples of the song and the song that Tamala sings and how it should be arranged, and I was at the studio when Tamala performed it, and it was
Comes
really
love.
Fun to collaborate with him on that.
Now, did you, because I have that as a question, did you pick that song? Did Robert pick that song, or did Terrence Paul Mueller?
Yeah, I think Terrence picked it. Maybe some of the other writers chipped in, but I'm pretty sure it was Terrence. He picked both those songs, both Comes Love and the Louis Armstrong song as well.
Now,
I Can't Give You Anything But Love.
The dancing? You know, because they did dancing. I was on the set for that one, the Blue Butterfly, and they did the dancing, and some of that was live music, and some of it was, like, scripted. So do you do that? Like, they're doing a dance one to Dance with Death. Did you do any live music on the one that's, the Dancing with the Stars one or whatever it is that they just did?
Yeah, we actually used we didn't record any new music for that. We used pre-recorded version of Copacabana that I found that's, it's like a dance version of it.
Barry Manilow?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah, and that was written into the script by the writer as well, Copacabana, but the exact version of it, as with the Louis Armstrong song, I have to find, they don't know, there's, 10 million versions of that Louis Armstrong song. So I have to find a particular one that I think is going to work in terms of instrumentation and everything else. And same with Copacabana.
Didn't he do that song in High Society with Grace Kelly and Frank Sinatra? Is that the wrong movie? It sounds like he sang that one in that High Society 1956.
Right.
I don't know. I ask weird things, I guess.
Yeah,
I'm an old movie buff,
I
love
that radio
host
thing.
Most viewers have never watched an episode or dailies being done or a director's cut without the background music or theme music or the song, So they really have never heard an episode go to air because there's always music. And it's very different when you get a cut when there's no music, how much it enhances the episode or a movie.
Right.
Without the music added, it's very boring, I would say. So whose job would it be to decide where music is inserted? The music supervisor and the editor together, or the music composer and the editor, or all of you? Because you touched on this, that Andrew can, say he wants something. So is it really the last call of the editor?
It's really the editor, I would say, 98% of the time. They put the first cut together, and they determine, maybe 90 to 95. They really take their pass at it, and they put in
the power.
Temporary score where they think there should be score that Robert will write. and based on the songs I've given them, hopefully. In my, I mean, I guess I am making suggestions because before they start, I'm sending them, you know, here's a song for the closing, here's a song for a montage scene earlier on where I think you could use music. They don't always take my suggestions, but so I guess I do have some influence there. But the editor really makes the call when they put it together. And even though the cut changes a lot, I would say, and the music selections might change, I would say where there's music and where there's not music doesn't change too much. It does occasionally in the spot, especially Robert will be listening to something and he'll say, you know, I don't know if we actually need music there. It's kind of funny when the composer says that, you know. We all go, really? But I think, if anything, music gets taken out but not really added. Rarely would we be, and that's just the nature of, I think, when you're first editing something and it's coming together, more music helps patch it together. And then once you're really at the final stages and everything's clicking and the whole show is flowing, then it's like, I don't know, maybe we actually don't need score in that scene. You know, maybe it'll work fine without it. And same with source music gets taken out a lot as well. So I would say we reduce, but we don't really add. Like, I'd say it's pretty rare that we watch a scene and there's no score in it and everybody goes, oh, yeah, we need score.
Do you ever not get something in one episode so you think, let's sneak it by the editor the next time around? Have you tried?
Because, of course, I never know whether they just hated the song or, you know, sometimes I'm a little wary of pitching a song that I've pitched before. But if I believe in it, I'll go back to it.
And try to get it in there and hope that it works and it passes through the...
Yeah.
So are we going to hear, this is from a fan from Brazil that sent this question in. Are we going to hear You Talk Too Much by Clarence Carter on a future episode of Castle?
Oh, because they quoted that song?
Yeah, where Donna's
a
character.
Right. I should put that on my list, try to get that in there. That would probably be a good little inside joke.
Yeah, to come later.
No plans at this time, right.
Well, because, you know, she says he talks too much in one of the episodes. It could be fun to show up in season 5 because, of course, we're going to get a season 5.
Oh, I certainly
hope
so. 6, 7,
yeah. And do you choose a song to use based on a character in the script? Say it's Beckett's emotions about her mother's murder or Castle's upset. And like in Sucker Punch, you use the song The End by Pearl Jam. Of course, that was the editor you said now snuck that in, Marta.
Yeah.
But do you go with a script and say, okay, Beckett's going to be really emotional this episode, or Martha's going to be real flirty, we need something really snazzy to slip in here? Do you do it by characters, or do you choose by just songs?
I would say maybe for Castle and Alexis, maybe there's a certain tone of song that works really well, the kind of the father-daughter songs. But besides that, the characters are so diverse on Castle, they're not really one-dimensional. You know, Castle seems like Mr. Playboy, I'm so great, that would be a certain kind of song, but he's really got a lot of depth to him. So sometimes when he's ruminating about his love for Beckett, you know, it calls for something much deeper. So I would say it's more by the scene than by the character.
Oh, cool. Now, what I'm going to ask you, as we're getting close to the end of our part of the interview, so we can open up the questions to the fans out there. So if you're listening now from around the world and you want to, because we have people from Brazil, all over South America, Russia, I mean, everywhere, Poland, Germany. Some of them get up in the middle of the night to listen to our broadcast. So they're listening live at like 3 and 4 a.m., Australia. I think every country, but we do not have somebody from, I think it was Alaska. We have every state in the union except Alaska, so somebody there.
We got Alaska last week, Pam.
Oh, did we? Okay. I mean, everywhere. I mean, New Zealand, and Holland, Belgium. So I'm getting ready to get to the end of the interview so that we can open up the phone line. So if you're out there listening, and of course you are, 347-857-4368 or Skype in, and you can start getting on the phone lines now because I'll be bringing this to an end so that you can start talking to Tricia on the phone. Do you get a lot of feedback from Castle viewers about the music you select through your website, Twitter, or via Castle ABC Mail? Do you get fan mail?
I don't think I've gotten any fan mail through the studio. Maybe they're holding it all for me. It never occurred to me. But I do follow Twitter and a lot of the comments. I mean, I feel like Twitter is the best place right now to take the vibe of Castle because the audience is so active. But I do occasionally check in on the ABC message boards, and I love it when people comment on the music and say, oh, that was a great song, or like when we used Soul Coughing, and people were like, oh, I haven't heard that song, and that was the song playing when the three Elvises walked into the casino.
Oh, Heartbreak Hotel.
Yeah, and people commented, oh, my God, I haven't heard that song in so long. I love it, and et cetera, or when people discover a new song like they did with Golden State. Of course, I love that. It just makes my job so worthwhile. So I sort of observe the website's not set up to take comments. That's really because I get too inundated with people that are just pitching their music to me. And they're
right.
Hassle fans.
Right.
They just want, like, get my music on a TV show. It's just too overwhelming, and it's, like I said, especially pitches that come that way are mostly not that good. So they've got to find another way to me if that's there.
Now, Seamus Dever said it takes like a year to get their mail. It was in July and he was getting Christmas cards. So hold the mail down there. But I did see where some of our viewers wrote me a private email and said, you know, you've helped them find songs from the show that they don't have the title for and different things. So that's very nice that you do try to help them.
Right. Sometimes I hear from the bands as well, like they'll show a real spike in their sales after something airs on Castle, which is, you know, fantastic. Then they send me an email, oh, my God, I can't believe it. I'm number one on iTunes this week just because you put my song in Castle. So I get feedback that way as well.
Well, and a lot of the viewers make music videos of all the Castle scenes, and then they put the music in that you guys find, and they pass it around, and the band's getting more popular. So I like to do something at the end of our interviews when they come to an end and play some question and answers with you, quick five questions to ask you about music. And so here we go. Without music, I would be?
Unemployed.
Music is?
The best thing in the world.
Okay, fine. My music makes me feel. The music you choose makes you feel.
Many different kinds of emotions, depending what I'm seeking that day.
I choose the songs because it's my job. No.
meaning which songs I choose or meaning why I choose
it. Because this is something that hits you.
They make the scene better.
Okay. Last movie you saw?
Last movie I saw was the Sherlock Holmes movie.
Ah.
Ooh, I saw that too.
Last
book I read.
I'm going to really make you...
In college,
no, I'm actually a
high
big
school.
Reader. I'm such a big reader that I can't even think of the last book I read.
What's on your bedside table to make you sleepy at night?
I'm going to look. I'm going
your
to
Kindle look. Or your iPad.
Yeah, I do have a Kindle. I have. I'll just say the Patti Smith book. I did just recently finish that. The Patti Smith biography, which is great. It's called Just Kids.
And who is Patti Smith? I don't know. Okay, you guys out there.
She's a rock goddess icon.
Oh, okay. And so, let's see, what was my other one? Oh, last song you sang. Do you sing in the shower?
I don't sing.
You don't sing?
It has to be Happy
you don't
Birthday.
Even...
It's so happy.
You don't hum or anything?
Pam,
not really.
She's an excellent listener. Haven't you heard her?
Okay, biggest pet peeve.
Oh, my. So many. Biggest pet peeve. I would say my biggest pet peeve is when people insist, not people that work on the show, but people that are submitting music to me, insist that they know what is best for the show more than me.
Oh.
Wow.
Really? That sounds like us when we review the episodes. No, just kidding.
Well, no, not like you guys. I mean, people that really want me to use their music, and they're positive. It sounds just like Golden State. Not really. It's terrible, actually.
Well, I know when you did use Golden State that they had people went nuts and went out there immediately and found that song. And, you know, they hadn't put it out yet. It wasn't even published yet.
Yeah.
There was going to be in a commercial or something.
Yeah.
And people were trying to use it in their videos. And I remember it was really funny because that it's just right after that episode went off the air, that people had videos out there. It was amazing how fast they get them up. But, Cheryl, did we have some callers for Tricia?
Yes, we do. Do you have a few more minutes, Tricia, for some calls?
Yes.
Okay.
I should ask that. That her throat's okay and she's feeling all right.
Okay. The first up, we have Mia from Oregon. Mia, do you have a question for Tricia?
Yes, I do.
Hi, Mia. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Pam. Hi, Cheryl. Hi, Tricia.
Hi.
My first question is, one of my favorite songs you ever used in Castle was Into the Blue by Sarah Jackson Holman in the season 2 finale. And since Sarah is a native of Oregon, I was wondering if you remembered where you discovered that song.
Uh-huh.
I do. That song was sent to me by, I work with I'll just call it a network of vendors, not the perfect word, but people that represent bands for the purpose of getting them into TV and film. There's really good reps and there's really bad reps. Just like you can go buy a car and your salesman can be super helpful, or you can go buy a car and the salesman can be completely useless and annoying. So I have, over the years, developed a great network of reps that I love, and this person has fantastic taste, and she's always repping really great bands. And she is the one that sent me the Sarah Jackson Holman album that I loved. And there's a great, I'm really actually glad you brought up that song. It's one of my favorite placements ever. But it was very controversial because, I won't name names, but I'll just say one of the producers really wanted score in that scene. I mean, he just thought a source would take away from everything. And even though he heard the song and he had nothing against the song, he just thought it should be score. And the other producer liked the song. He liked both. He was kind of on the fence. And I wasn't there, but it was apparently quite a knockdown, drag-out argument on the mix stage where they made the final decision.
Andrew, Rob, David, Lori. I'm trying to figure out which one it is. I'm kidding.
I was breathlessly awaiting, you know, the answer because, this, as you said, it's a great example of an artist that everybody should know about. She's so fantastic, and that song is so beautiful. And it made a big difference to her career, and I was sure they were going to pull it at the last minute.
You won out.
But it won out. And not only that, it's a sore point to this day with that producer. He's constantly getting needled about it.
That's who I saw arm wrestling the other day. No, I'm just kidding. I saw him arm wrestling over the song. So, Mia, do you have another question for Tricia?
Actually, a lot of mine were already answered, but I do have one more.
Sure, go for it.
My other question is, what or who determines whether a soundtrack album will be released for a TV show? I'm also a huge fan of The Big C, and I know that there was a partnership with Stand Up to Cancer for that show, but I'm wondering, you know, who decides that? I mean, is it a licensing question, or is it a decision made by the executives of the show or by you?
It's really the network that has to decide, and networks vary a lot on how supportive they are of soundtracks or not. I feel that soundtracks are actually seem to be a dying breed, more or less, and perhaps it's because people can find music so easily the minute the show is done airing that it's just not as much of a need for it as there used to be. But I feel like there's less and less soundtracks, which is a shame because they're great to make great mixtapes. But for The Big C, it was definitely something that Sony, the studio, really wanted to do, and especially because they could tie it into Stand Up to Cancer, and they really got behind that. I think when networks see a lot of chatter on the boards about the music, or they really feel like there's, you know, a niche that they're hitting there, they'll do it then. But it's really up to them. The show can't do it by themselves. It has to be really come from the network and the studio.
So everybody out there, listen up. We want a Castle CD of all these fun songs from all these artists. We've been trying. Rob's been trying really hard. But they need to. It would be so neat if they could put like all the best songs from the show and have like 20 tracks on it and sell it out there on the websites like ABC.com or something.
And the score as well. That's the thing. Like most of these songs you can find, but Rob Duncan's score, which is so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That should really be put out because that's really something.
He did allow us to play.
It's 99 cents on iTunes right now.
Yes, yeah. And he allowed us to play some of the songs the night he was on.
Good.
So it was a lot of fun,
good.
Like Martha's titles to her, you know, what is it, her Martha-isms and different
good.
Things. So it was a lot of fun that they got to hear some of the stuff that he doesn't use that he had on, you know, in stock or whatever. But are you going to Paley Center, Tricia, for Friday night with the cast and crew? Did you get invited?
I just heard about it, but I don't because
you're cold.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm going to go, but there may be a musical component. I probably can't say it, then that's
yeah.
why I was contacted about it. I don't think it's been announced, and we may not be able to pull it off, but I'm going to be working on something for that, even if I'm not there.
Well, hopefully you will be. We'll be there. Yeah, we're there.
Yay.
We got great seats.
Thank you, Mia.
Thank you so much.
Mia, from Oregon. I think Eugene, Oregon. She works at a radio station, too, as I recall.
Nice.
That's a first-time call for her, isn't it?
You're
shy. Some people are very shy. You ought to know that from 15 years as DJ.
Yeah.
To get people on, especially men. Did you get a lot of men callers, just for curiosity?
I would say it was pretty mixed, but yeah, I know the feeling. I can talk to a lot of people about radio, and 99% of people would never call a radio station, mm-hmm. no matter how passionate they are. But I will say one time I did do just because you asked about men, I did a special that was based on 60s and 70s music. I think I took a decade, not an exact decade, but it was, I think, 62 to 71, my premise being that's the best 10 years of music.
Right.
And I got a couple letters from prisoners after that show. I think they had it on in the yard or something.
Wow.
That was kind of funny.
Hey, your music reaches everywhere.
I will tell you, I have 50 phone lines and every one of them is filled up, but I will take a few more for
you.
You
better
get
to it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
If she's okay, because, you know, as long as she's okay and can, you know.
Elena, are you still there from Brooklyn?
Elena.
Hi.
From Brooklyn? You're from Brooklyn?
Yep.
Yes, I am.
Oh, New Yorker. Okay.
You know it.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. First, I just wanted to call in for a couple of reasons. The first one is that a very good friend of mine, he actually works here for ABC, and he works on music licensing for Castle. And he's always telling me how much he enjoys what he does because he thinks that the music selection is pretty amazing, and he's a big music buff. So you're doing a pretty good job there.
Thank you.
Yeah. But second of all, I just think that there have been several songs that have really stood out for me that kind of made certain scenes stay with me for a really long time. And I think that the caller before me just mentioned the Into the Blue, which I can't listen to that song without getting sad because I can still, picture, Beckett kind of looking after Castle in that scene, and it breaks my heart every time. I really like, of course, Pearl Jam. I love every time Pearl Jam is used because I'm a big fan. The use of Just Breathe is one of my favorites ever, as is the kind of quirky and unexpected The Most Star Diving Club, Give a Little Love.
That was a good one. I love that song.
It was great. I actually taught it to my fifth grade class, and they really liked it. So they asked to sing it once in a while. But has there ever been, has there been so far a song or a scene for you that has really stood out where you feel particularly proud of that one, or that that's kind of stayed with you the way those scenes have stayed with me?
Let's see. I would say all the ones you mentioned are good candidates for that. I had kind of a personal attachment to one of the bands I used, The Frames, and the song, I can't even remember the name of it, but it played when Beckett went to visit prison to visit the man that killed her mother.
Lockwood.
The bad guy. Who we saw in Revenge.
Max Marine or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Martine or whatever his name is.
Yes.
It was called Rise. And I've known the lead singer of The Frames is named Glenn Hansard. He also has a band called The Swell Season, which won an Academy Award a few years back for a song, for a best original song in the movie called Once. Anyway, I've known Glenn since really no one knew who he was, and he would come and stay at my house in Santa Monica when he was visiting from Ireland, and he would busk, for money on the Third Street Promenade. And so I just have a great friendship with him, and I love all his music and everything he does. But it sometimes is hard to get it placed because it's so dramatic that it doesn't work well in a lot of scenes. And this came about in a way organically, but I also engineered it, again, with Marta, I call her the Pearl Jam editor, because we've already referenced her. I knew that she would love The Frames because they're they have a similar passion to Pearl Jam. And I actually, as with many editors, like, it's always great if the idea, if they think it's their idea, right? They can come about it organically rather than just have me give them a bunch of music.
Right.
So I actually took Marta to a Frames concert, Marta and her husband Warren, to introduce them and so that they could just see how fantastic this band was. And as with, I mean, anybody I've ever taken to a Frames concert, they love it. They're just a really amazing, dynamic band live. And she was just completely hooked after that. And coincidentally, and I also got to introduce her to Glenn backstage, and mm-hmm. I think I mentioned she was a Pearl Jam fan, and he had just been hanging out with Eddie Vedder, and they had just set in motion the plan for them to go on tour together. It was just, all came together so beautifully, I couldn't hardly believe it as I was watching the conversation.
I see what's happening.
Yeah. And
that was
then,
your way to get the editors to do what you wanted.
A little sneaky. But, it was...
No, that was
cause.
A suggestion again. Like, come in. It's a valid
right.
suggestion. Okay, thank
right.
you so much,
you're welcome.
Elaine. We also have Andy from New York. Are you still there, Andy?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello, Andy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? Hi, Trisha.
Fine.
Hi.
Thank you for coming to the STR. I think that was very nice of you.
I am so thrilled to be here.
Good, good. I don't have any questions. You answer all of them for me. But I do wanted to tell you that I do love all the music on Castle. I think I'm the only crazy person that listens to the music during the summer hiatus. During the summer last year, it was a funny story. This lady asked me, that is the weirdest range of music you have. And I say, it's a Castle soundtrack. And she just started laughing.
Yeah, that's a great comment. It is true. The music is quite diverse. And if you played it all back to back, people would never understand what the premise was. That's very funny.
Call it random music.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Andy.
I got more. I wanted to say that I like the finish line, Too Deep, Give Me a Little Love, and True Love. I think those are very
aww.
Good.
Oh, good. Thank
the
you.
The one that outstands that was the cutest, I think it was Lily.
Lily was great. Yeah,
yes,
that was
I liked
great.
It.
That was also a Marta pick. She picked that song.
Yes, it's cute. It's a cute song. I also wanted to let you know that I do have a song thread on ABC boards where members can share songs that remind them of Castle and Beckett. And I'm up about 526 posts and about 53 pages long.
Oh, that's great. That's a great idea.
How many people have viewed the thread?
About 25,000.
There you go. ABC.com/Castle. And you can go over there, and I think it's called Songs of Castle, and they talk about all the songs you use, Tricia, on the show.
I better start keeping an eye on that.
Yeah, all over the world. Yeah.
Hey, Andy, do you follow Tricia on Twitter?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
When did you start?
About six, 7 months ago, maybe more.
There you go. Okay. So you got to update. I went over there, and I think the last time you posted was January the 24th. Tricia.
Oh, me?
Yeah. I thought it was...
She posted 2 days
every
ago.
Week.
No,
I didn't see. I saw January the 24th was my top tweet on her page. Maybe it's
actually
on Twitter.
I made a New Year's resolution to post a recommended record every week. And I have done that so far.
Then what did I look at? I saw January 24th.
No idea.
Because I got this new Twitter. They just changed the West Coast over. I don't know if they did you, Tricia, but they changed Twitter, and it's the new Twitter. And it's all opposite now than the old Twitter. I don't know if you noticed your page layout.
It may be...
I can't find anything now.
It may be that the last Castle-related tweet might have been...
In January 24th.
But you should have, because I only tweet about Castle when there's there's a new episode airing and there's source in it, and there was two back-to-back episodes, the two-parter, that didn't have any source music, so I didn't tweet about those.
Now, when did you start on Castle? Season 2 episode at the beginning or the middle? Or
201.
So you didn't do No Envy, No Fear, right? That would be season 1.
Right.
Correct.
No Envy, No Fear. That's used on a lot of TV shows, by the way, that song.
Huh.
That was used in episode 5, season 1.
Thanks, Andy.
You're welcome. Thank you, Trish.
Next up is Kelly in St. Louis. Hey, Kelly.
Kelly.
Hello,
Kelly.
Hi, Kelly.
How are you doing?
Great.
We're fine.
Okay. My questions are, where did you get the inspiration for some of the music that you pick out for a certain episode, or is it more the information that you get from the writer of that episode?
I would say, I guess from the writer, because it comes from the script mostly. I think they're pretty clear about the tone. When you read a script, it's pretty obvious what they're going for. It's either a super serious, like there's a super serious episode coming up. I don't even know if there will be any source in it. It's different than a lot of other cats. There's no, like, humor.
We'll be all dead, so it
really
won't matter.
You know. and so that the tone is just usually very clear. Then there's, like, the dog show episode is very lighthearted and funny, and, you know, that really sets the tone. Over it all, there's a very broad Castle framework of what type of music we like to use on the show. It's a really broad palette, I would say. But within that, then every show has definitely a different tone.
Mm-hmm. And what song was the hardest or the easiest to pick out for an episode?
Oh, my gosh, that's a good question.
I make you rack your brain and go back through the episodes.
I think the easiest was Copacabana because they already told you they wanted it in there.
Yeah, well, the ones written into the script. I did suggest some alternatives, but I couldn't really beat Copacabana. It was such a great idea.
And the hardest she told you was, well, one you fought for, the producers fought over.
Yeah, that actually was really hard because that would be Into the Blue by Sarah Jackson Holman. That ending was so long. And we had to find a song that would really lay in there and not interfere too much with dialogue. It went really over three scenes. It started in the precinct, and then it went over Alexis and Castle when Alexis is leaving for her trip, and then it went back to the precinct. And, I mean, it just went on for so long. It really had to be the perfect song. And it was really hard to find something with the right tone, and it had to be, I mean, sad, sadder than the saddest song you've ever heard. So that one was kind of tough, and then as we discussed it, I knew that Score, it was competing with Score, so that put the pressure on.
And there is one song that I think the entire fandom would love to see incorporated into one of the episodes, and that song is Lady Antebellum's Just a Kiss.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, we'd all like to see some more kissing going on that show.
Are you kidding?
Thank you.
Are you a shipper?
I'm a shipper. I want them to just get together already.
I know. You sound like everybody else. Get it on. Get over with it. Come on.
Love, Trisha. You're our number one.
This is the longest courtship in American history.
I know.
I saw your positive letters to Trisha.
They just touched hands last week's show.
Yeah, and they just dropped it like a dead fish. There you go. Okay, thank you so much, Kelly in St. Louis.
Thanks,
next up,
Kelly.
Beth in your own yard. Beth in L.A.
I'm here.
Welcome, Beth.
Hello, Trish. Hello, Pam.
Hi,
hello, Cheryl.
Hello.
I don't really have a question, but I love the song by Bruno Mars, which is Just the Way You Are. And I'd love to see that as they're walking together at the end sometime.
You mean the end of the series or the end of an episode?
Well, the end of an episode.
End of an
Not
episode.
The series.
Doesn't
okay,
that
good.
Sound
good?
I'll keep that in mind.
You got a notepad? Are you writing this down? We'll have to send you the link.
I just wrote it down.
You know, you can listen to the show. We'll send you the link because they're telling you what to do now, Trisha.
I'm just suggesting.
I know, I'm just teasing.
Pam.
Thanks, Beth.
Boss and the guest.
You're welcome.
Good way. Okay.
I'll see you on Friday. Yeah.
I'll see you on Thursday.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Day after tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay, next up we have Sarah from Virginia. Sarah, are you still there?
Sarah.
I'm here.
Welcome, Sarah.
Hello. You have a question?
Go ahead.
I don't really have any questions. I just have a couple of comments.
Okay.
I heard you talking about a Delray in California, and there's actually one in my hometown.
In Virginia?
Yeah.
Maybe they're sister cities or something.
Maybe they are.
Yeah. And anything else you want to say to Trisha?
Oh, I just started following her on Twitter today, and I was checking out her website, and I found the write-up as to how she came across the Come and Find Me used in To Live and Die. Very interesting.
To Love and Die in L.A. episode, last season's episode, 22. Great. Anything else you'd like to say? People get on.
Thanks, Sarah.
You're welcome.
That's it. Okay.
I think we are. Well, we did answer a lot of questions.
Scaring everybody to death.
Let me look real quick on Twitter. We have Bagpipe60, who's from Ontario, Canada, writes, given that fans are awaiting the ultimate collaboration of Castle and Beckett, have you been searching for that perfect song when they do?
Very good.
I have been stockpiling songs for that, as a matter of fact, for three seasons now.
Her wish list.
Which are
a long catalog.
That's why she's blocking that in her picture. She's blocking her selection. That's what she's doing. Everybody else is just...
Well, you can't contact her.
I'm sorry, I missed one. We have Jacqueline. Jacqueline, are you still there from New York?
Hi, I'm here.
Hey.
Can you hear me? Hi,
you
everybody.
Hello.
I do. I have a question. Well, actually, it's more of a statement. First of all, I love the music. And you don't know how many people I got into Castle just from the music, because I have a playlist on my iPod. And my friends and I like bake and cook a lot together. And I swear to you, in the last 3 weeks, I got 4 people into the show just from the music.
Great.
Oh, that's
what
fantastic.
A compliment.
How great.
No, we have a holiday coming up, and I was baking, and last night my friend and I kept repeating the playlist over and over again, and she borrowed my first 3-season DVDs to go watch it. So you must
that
be doing
is
something,
so,
right?
So great to hear. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's
so
awesome.
What is their favorite song that you're playing on this playlist
Rise.
Over and over and over
they
again?
They love
right?
Rise.
Right.
They love it. And then the Pearl Jam song. I grew up loving Pearl Jam, so... I never even realized that was a Pearl Jam song until I looked on, like, on YouTube. I realized it was a Pearl Jam. I didn't even realize.
Oh, good. Yeah, here's another little fact about Rise. That was a song that the network, because they get the final say on the last cut, they were like, man, we're not so sure about that song at the end. And Andrew, Rob, and I, we were like, what? And we made, like, a half-hearted attempt to find some alternatives, but in the end, Andrew overruled them and said that song
Great.
Is sticking. And the fans do love it, so they were really...
Way to go, Andrew.
Respect on that one.
Well, thank you, Jacqueline, for calling in. And we'll take one last call, and this one is from Brenda in Kansas, Missouri. Hey, Brenda.
Hey, Brenda.
Hey, guys. Hi, Tricia. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm at the tail end of a cold, so it's probably good we're ending because I'm getting a little sniffly.
Okay, well, I'll make this really short then. Earlier, you said something about the piano man being on Castle, and I didn't catch all of it. Was that one of your songs that you picked?
That was a song that was written into the script, and what happened is the cast sang it at the end of the show as they were leaving the station. It was the episode, was it called The Old Haunt? It was the episode where the murder was in the old haunt. I don't know what the title of it is.
Last Call.
Last Call, yes.
Yeah, I have it on my cell phone for a ringing call on it.
Right, so we didn't actually use the Billy Joel version, but the cast sang the song a cappella, and then Robert Duncan added a little bit of score, of reinterpretation of the song, actually, as score.
Ah.
Okay.
Great.
Now, is there any possibility you could twist Andrew's arm in the... when Casket does get together, that you can have him place a smile on your face?
I'm afraid I don't have that kind of influence, Brenda, but I think they feel the pressure, trust me. What's
we
great is
when they
do it, they're going to do it perfectly, because Andrew just has such a good vision and for everything. That's one thing I love about the show. They just do things so well, you know, like at the beginning of the season was just so well handled, how they were mad at each other, but they got over it. And so when it does happen, it's going to be good, I'm sure.
Well, they better hurry. I'm getting really old. No.
Thanks, Brenda.
I did want to say One Man's Treasure. I remember the song I like. I'm Still Fact, She's Fiction.
Oh, yes.
By
I
Mads or whatever they call it. That's
Mads,
the one
Mads
I love. Liner. I thought it was No Envy, No Fear, which I do like, but it's I'm Still Fact, She's Fiction by Fiction Mads.
Yeah, that was mine. And, I love that song. I mean, what a great lyric. I'm Still Fact, She's Fiction. It's just brilliant.
I love that. Yeah, I love that. And then Crash and Burn for Overkill by Lighthouse. That was very popular with all the fans out there all over the world.
Oh, good, yeah.
And so, but we want to wrap this up. And
hey,
Cheryl?
I did want to ask one other question, and this will be my last one, I promise. My favorite episode from last season, not this season, was Punked because of the visual as well as the music that was going on in the background. I just wanted to say I love the – I was taking that all in. Not so much the story, you know, there was funny parts of it and everything, but the visual and the music combined just really captivated me. I just wanted to say thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. That was a great one because steampunk really – music is a whole part of steampunk, so – and I had frankly never heard of it until it was written into that episode. I had to go, what is steampunk? And I did research and figured it out. And there's a lot of bands that are just part of the normal music, you know, world, but they also are steampunk bands because they've been so designated by steampunk fans. So that was a really fun one.
Well, and Tricia, people are telling me, Lucky Stiff, move that, you know, get on the floor by the Page Brothers. They're saying that was wonderful, and they love it, and they still listen to that. And La 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 by the Californian.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
And
too.
The Frames you mentioned by Rise. So we're okay. So everybody, we'd like to say thank you very much for coming on our show. We've been trying to get you for a long time, and we're glad it all worked out. And
it was a pleasure
to interview you, and hope you had fun.
I did. I had a great time. It was a great interview.
You're welcome back anytime you want to promote anything, this show, any show. And we hope you feel better, and we hope we see you at maybe at the Paley Center Friday night. You never know.
Yeah, you never know.
Thank you for calling in, and I'll send you a link to the show, and you can listen to it at your leisure or if you need it for anything, for reference.
Okay.
And it was, like I said, a pleasure to have you. So, everybody, we'd like to thank Tricia for coming on SDR.